Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Euphoria Season 2, Episode 6 is over, but we are just getting started. My name is Grace. We're here to talk about the episode, A Thousand Little Trees of Blood. Quite the name of an episode. Normally I'd be joined by Amon Adwin. Amon cannot make it this week, but that's okay. I'm euphoric to have another guest with us, a podcaster I've podcasted with many interesting shows that would probably involve A Thousand Little Trees of Blood. That's Jess Sterling. Hi, Jess.
Hi, Grace. I heard that there was diarrhea involved, and on shows that have diarrhea, I must be included.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Josh is going to be so mad when he finds out. Yeah. Yeah. Withdrawal diarrhea. Big topic of the conversation in this episode of Euphoria. Yeah. So you're here. It's great. Thanks for joining. Tell us your Euphoria history. How'd you get into the show? When did you start watching? All that fun stuff.
Yeah, so I got into the show late after everybody else did. Season one had already aired. It had been out. I want to say even maybe the specials were coming out.
Yeah.
And I'd heard a lot about the show, but I also knew like it was very heavy. And so I think that's kind of why I put it off a little bit. But then once I started, it was like, it's one of those things where you're like, I shouldn't binge this. It's like, what is it that TikTok where it's like, don't do it.
I'm going to do it.
Yeah. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And so I did. I binged it. And then leaning up to season two, I re-binged it because I knew eventually I might come on the podcast. And I like to have I have a terrible memory and I wanted to have my memory bank full of everything that had happened in season one. But yeah, quickly fell in love with the show. It's brilliant. I was just thinking today, it is probably the best current show airing on television right now. And overall,
Because we've talked a lot about Succession being perhaps.
Well, that is shows. Okay. Because so my husband asked the same question. And I said currently as in is airing new episodes at this moment.
Okay.
I think Succession might beat it out a little bit. And I'm like, so sorry. That's so sorry, fun. Euphoria.
We're on the HBO feed. Costa Rica.com/HBO pod. Yeah. Everyone, we watch everything. Yeah.
But I think Succession maybe beats it in the comedy department. But
yeah, sure.
I do think Euphoria is it's both beautiful cinematography, has beautiful cinematography. The acting is so well done and incredible. And just the stories and just the wide variety of types of people and types of stories that we're getting on television. I think it's this is going to be an important show, I think, for anybody coming of age to see.
What I keep hearing is it's representing drug addiction, and a lot of these heavy topics that sometimes shows can be clunky, can be a bit heavy handed, can tackle them when maybe they shouldn't. And this one feels like it's very spot on, especially I think people relating to what Rue is going through. And it's tough watch this week. I know last week Zendaya had released a statement that it felt like this was her rock bottom. They mentioned that in the show this week. Ali is like, you think you hit rock bottom? It's like, I don't know. And, you know, I think that it certainly feels like Rue is on the road to recovery, but I don't know if I, you know, and I'm in kind of Camp Gia. You're like, I don't know, Rue. You said that before. Yeah.
It's so hard. I mean, we don't know, right? This is a show that does not have a determined ending, right? Nope. Like, we don't know how many seasons this will go for. Nope. So, like, I imagine when they have an addict character who is an addict, I should say,
yep,
on television, it's only a matter of time. But I mean, obviously we can all be a little bit optimistic. We can all be hopeful. Yeah. There are so many other characters and so many other storylines they can explore. They can explore so many other storylines with Rue, but besides her addiction.
Well, I do think that even if you're a recovering addict, you know, that is a story. That is a thing you struggle with and deal with. And I don't know that, you know, if she relapsed again, I wouldn't be surprised, but also there is a world in which this show, you know, even if it don't, you know, I think to put on my Josh Wigler hat for a bit, his thing was, you know, if Succession season 3, if they had renewed it for season 4, and his point was they would have said that was the last season. So I don't know at the top of my head whether season 3 has been renewed, but I do think the same thing. They would probably say, yep, we've renewed it for one more season. Right. That's the final season. You know, it's going to be the final season of Euphoria. So I don't think a 3-season run is there. I think somewhere between 4 to 5 feels.
I think so too.
Right.
They're young.
They're teens.
Yeah, they'll age obviously to the point where it's a bit unrealistic and we're like suspending our disbelief too much.
Yeah.
But I do think, like, because we have such an ensemble cast with this group, and there are so many stories that are being told, and they're short seasons, so there's still so much to explore with these characters that I feel like I'm just like, you know, I want more. Like, I want more of each of these characters. Obviously, I love Rue and Jules and their storylines. But these side characters, I'm like also very interested in and invested in. And so I think we can see there definitely is a path forward for like 4 or 5 seasons for the show, for sure.
Yeah. And as I said, this is episode 6. We only have two more episodes left of the season after this. It's gone by very quickly. And I think my point earlier was like, there's a lot more that the show can tackle. And in these, like, you know, shorter seasons, I could see, you know, whatever the rest of Rue's story is her trying to remain sober.
Right.
And hopefully succeeding in that is what I would, you know, would be great, but I could see that being the story. So this episode, let's jump into it. We start off with Rue. She's staring at a Jolly Rancher. And I'm not sure I understand the significance behind the Jolly Rancher that much, other than that Rue can't open it. She can't get it. She can't get the thing that she wants. She's struggling with withdrawal. Leslie, her mother, is there trying to give her a glass of water.
Yeah, great snot acting by Zendaya in this scene.
Snot acting.
It was disgusting.
Yeah, she's going through it at the moment. Yeah,
yeah.
This withdrawal. This seems to be perhaps the day after her, the last time we saw her when she gets
home. I wonder if maybe the Jolly Rancher is like, you know how like when people who are like addicted to cigarettes and are trying to quit, they need, like, they go to something else, like lollipops or something they could put in their hands or in their mouth. I wonder if maybe a Jolly Rancher is like supposed to help
perhaps
with that. But yeah, so sad to try to watch her just like fumble with this Jolly Rancher forever, and her mom is just like trying her best to like help out. I mean, obviously she's going through a really, really rough detox here, like not easy.
I think perhaps it's also this, like, it's something you want that you can't quite, you feel like you can't quite get, and it's something that like is like good, you know, simply turn, you know, the nice piece of candy that she like can't actually, she can't do it herself. Right. So yeah, she has this very interesting line. She says, I like hospitals because they don't need to know how good of a person you are before they'll help you.
Good thing, huh?
Yeah, that's pretty good. Imagine a morality test at the hospital. Like, yikes. Rue's mom grew up in a church. We get a little snippet of her, and she said the good thing is that they believe in forgiveness, say what you will about Christians. And we really see her struggling. She's in bed. She's on the floor of the bathroom. And really, she's thinking about that. She's saying a lot of mean things. She's saying, you know, she calls herself a liar, abusive, a thief, and she's manipulative. But the thing she really regrets is reducing Ollie's life to a single moment. Just regrets about this. So
yeah. Question for you, because this struck me as not odd necessarily, but Do you think that the reason she regrets so much about what she said about Ali specifically, because people could say the same thing about her, because she doesn't seem to mention anything she said to her mom or her sister, which were also like really, really rough.
Yeah. We saw her kick down a door, like literally kick it down. But I do think, I think it's, she's feeling like she made some very bad decisions, especially this last episode. And she's thinking, you know, I think that's what she's saying, right? She's like, that's what people do. They reduce you down to a single moment. So I shouldn't have said that to Ali, because, and I think there is just something different about Rue's relationship with Ali versus her mother and her sister, in the sense of like, Ali's been through it, you know? I think that she sort of recognizes, you know, he's somebody who, the way he's approaching how to help Rue is different than anybody else on the show is approaching helping Rue. And I think Rue can recognize that and see that, that like, it's like he has some tough love in him, certainly, but like, he's not wrong. You know, he's been right. Basically everything that he's said to her is, you know, probably shouldn't be with Jules. That's a bad idea. It's okay for your sister to doubt whether you're going to get clean, because like, you're the one who has to get clean. Like, it, you know, and I think that there's something about that. And I think, reflecting on herself too.
It made me a little bit sad just to not hear. And I mean, obviously, like, I'm sure she does feel bad. I mean, we see she has like a tiny moment later with her sister, but like, it made me a little bit sad. Like, I wanted to see those apologies, and I'm sure like they could be coming down the line.
She says she'll do them after she gets clean.
Yeah, that's what she says. But her
little IOU apologies on the way.
Yeah. Just write a note, leave it on your bedroom pillow. I owe you an apology. Yeah. But the moment that she calls Ali to apologize. Like, again, can we just give Zendaya all of the awards ever? Like, specifically her mouth acting. I don't understand how someone can be like, you could literally cover her face from her nose up and still there's so much packed into just what her mouth is doing in this scene.
It's so really good. Strong. She can't quite get the words out. She's silent for a bit, but eventually she does apologize. He does forgive her, and she's like, you really do. And she's like, why? He says, because the hour is certain to come, so we must forgive graciously. And so she cries and she opens a Jolly Rancher. She eats it. But it's really good. Just like, if we're just on Rue. Ali's not even in this scene. He's just on the phone. We hear his voice and he says very little. He says, I forgive
you. There's so much silence.
There's so much silence that, like, you know, and I think that is part of it. I mean, Rue is somebody who is struggling with addiction, but that doesn't mean she can get away with the things that she said. And she does have to she has to have responsibility. And sometimes, like, I'm a bad apologist. When I was a summer camp director, maybe I'm a bad apologizer, but that's not the point I was trying to make. I was a bad critique giver when I needed somebody, one of my staff, to like fix. And I would say like, listen, like, I need you to be, you know, a little bit. And I'd be like, it's fine.
You like soften the blow.
Yeah. And I just need to fill the void of like, I need the words.
Oh, the
like,
silence.
I hate the silence.
I have gotten a lot better as someone who loves to talk. I have gotten a lot better at allowing there to be silence simply because it is like a tool used in sales that like, if you leave the silence, someone will fill it in. And so I would have moments where I'd be working and like, people would be so rude to me and I would just sit silently because eventually they would run out of things to say and realize, wow, I'm a big jerk. Yeah. So like, allowing there to be silence. And I love and appreciate that this show is not afraid for us to sit in the silent moments, because first of all, Zendaya can fill them with her amazing acting. Yes. But second of all, because like, I feel like a lot of shows nowadays are very fast paced just because we don't have attention spans anymore, but this show, and even like the lighting coming in from the one side of the room, lighting up one half of Zendaya's face, like all very beautifully shot. And this scene is one of the best of the entire episode.
I mean, they're on HBO here, but there's also like the short run seasons are also a thing where I'm feeling on some shows like, oh, we're rushing through. We're getting from point A to point B because we don't have time to let it linger. But this show loves to let, like, Sam Levinson loves to let stuff linger. He loves to just like let us sit in a moment. And it's really great. So Ollie comes over for dinner. He says only, you know, forgives her, but he gets to come over and cook dinner. He asks Gia to help. And when Rue offers, he's like, no, you get out of here. You got your withdrawal diarrhea stank. So no, you're out of the kitchen. And then when Leslie's like, okay, I'll, you know, laughing at Rue, like, no, you too. You've probably been helping her. So
yeah, you've been cleaning her ass up. Get out of here.
Yeah.
Love Ollie. He's one of my favorite characters. Like, he's grown to be one of my favorites. I just think he is the nicest, and like, I love Leslie had like a new look going on. Yeah, like, girl,
well, we know she gives Rue a look when the scene when Leslie says to Ollie, like, how she's doing good, right? And he's like, I don't know if that's a statement or a question. And but after he leaves, she's like, oh, he seems nice.
Yeah,
like, yeah, I don't know. I think that's bad news.
No, it's probably not good, but like, you know, we can't help it.
Yeah,
but I love Ollie's interactions with Gia because
it's good.
No one ever, and I would love to see more growth, more time put into kind of expanding who Gia is as a character, because like Gia's like, oh, I think she's doing better. And he's like, you don't need to do that. Like, I know this must be really hard on you, because no one ever, I'm sure she is always second fiddle. She's always never, she's never the one who needs the attention. Rue is the one who needs the attention. Mm-hmm. So Gia gets sidelined a lot of the time, not to her fault or anything. It's just how it has been.
Yeah, I love this stuff. You know, he's saying it's okay to be angry at her. And she says, I don't see how that would help. Well, it would help you. You know, it's okay. Like, live your emotions, you know, express them. It's fine.
Yeah. Anger is an emotion. And sometimes you need to express it, whether that is like going outside and screaming at the wind.
Yeah.
Like, just to release it, you know?
Yeah. And she insists that she's fine. And she sort of like doubles down on it. And he's like, I didn't say I didn't believe you. Like, you know, it's like her, he's so smart. He's so great. Like, he's so good in these social interactions. Cause basically like with one line of being like, I didn't say I didn't believe you is like basically outing that she's like, she's defending her own statement, right? She's like, it's really good.
She has a little bit of armor built up too.
Certainly.
Cause like she's, you know, defending her own family. Like Ollie is like pretty much a stranger to her, at least as much as Rue knows him and trusts him. She doesn't. So I appreciate this from Gia. I really would love, like, the only stuff we really got from her outside of Rue is like when they went to like the carnival and she was like smoking weed with some kids.
It's hanging out with McKay's brothers. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I would love to see more of her this season, next season. I just think like, she's a character we could see development from that we would really benefit from.
Yeah. I mean, this story resonates with me a lot. I've talked on this podcast about how like addiction is a thing in my family, you know, and it's, you know, so it being this idea of her being like, I don't see how that would help, you know, to be angry or to be mad. I think it's really well told storytelling about, you know, someone in the family or sibling or, you know, kid, whoever, someone dealing with somebody else. And there is this like hesitation to want to have people sort of know how they've affected you because you're worried that like making them feel bad will make them want to use drugs.
Right.
It is certainly like a real feeling that, you know, I think I can say I've had, where like, you feel like you're stuck in this place of like, you need to keep it inside and be fine, because if you rock the boat, then and you know, it's not fun to live in that thing of like, let's just pretend it's happy. Because if I'm the one who makes it not happy, being not happy is probably something that will make you want to do drugs, right? So it's very complicated. And I think it's really good stuff. And I love that Ollie is the sponsor here, is, you know, showing some love to Gia, and sort of like, you know, he sort of like ends up being like a support system to all of them in some way, which is really great. So we jump from the greatest person on the show, Ollie, to Nate Jacobs, who's working out. And, you know, Rue says he actually woke up feeling pretty good today. He's working out. He doesn't check his phone while he's working out. He puts it on silent. His mom is in a great mood, too. She's dancing in the kitchen. She's living life, smoking a cigarette. She's great.
Loving. Okay, so this episode was like the coming out party for Nate's mom,
Marcia. Yeah,
I was living for it. I mean, like, she's in a terrible mental space, right? But like, it is so fun to watch her just spiraling in this tornado of like anger and sadness and like bluntness, just coming, firing on all cylinders at Nate. Amazing.
I mean, I do think there's part of this that, like, I do think that, like, gosh, Marcia, I think some of this might be on YouTube. Like,
oh, for sure. She takes none of the blame.
No blame. It's like every, but like, that's very Jacobs, like, you know, But gosh, some of the stuff
he says. You stood next to him the whole time as he did all of this stuff.
In the same way, it was very fun to see Cal just like, you know, be a tornado through the house.
Oh yeah, he peed on the floor.
They have not cleaned it up.
It was okay.
That's so gross. I don't know how many days.
How many? Is it the same day? Right.
I don't know the timeline of everything that happened, because it does seem like if they're not that much further from everything that happened like two episodes ago, which is at the count. But then also there's stuff where like, when Rue comes over to Cassie's, it looks like that's not the same night as the party, obviously.
Right.
Right. Like there's remnants of the party, but that's not the party night. So
it's either like a day or two. And regardless, yeah, as soon gross. As Cal walks out the door, someone needs to clean the pee up.
Yeah, Aaron should be clean. I think Aaron is that they both hate him. So they should tell him to go clean up the pee. Yeah.
Yeah.
And no resolution this episode. I thought for sure we were going to get and also your other brother, like no resolution on the other Jacob's brother.
Yes. Here's the thing. I feel, because I know you've talked about this a bunch and like I saw the portrait and everything like that. I could have sworn that Aaron is not old enough to be the oldest. I thought there was an older brother, and the older brother is the one we have not seen.
I do think that it being the oldest brother does make sense after this conversation, or the conversation that comes up a little bit later, because I do feel like if something happens to another kid in this family, when for Marcia to be like, you just got really dark around 8 or 9. Like if there's another brother who like died or left, isn't that the perfect explanation for like why Nate is like a little bit darker? But like she would say that, right? Like she would say like,
yeah,
you got weird when something happened to the other kid, you know?
See, okay, because the thing is like I, in my mind, when she says that you got weird at 8 or 9, my mind didn't go necessarily to an older brother or to a brother in general. My mind immediately went to like sexual abuse. Like,
oh, this is when he finds it. It's when he starts finding the stuff of his father.
Right. Well, I know I connect to the timeline, but I guess that could be why. I guess no, I was just thinking it was more active than passive, if that makes sense.
I do think there could be more to what happened to Nate when he was younger. What I'm saying is that I don't think there is anything that like, I don't think there's a younger brother. Cause if there's a younger brother, doesn't that come up? Like, yeah, you like, you're pretty messed up, my son. Also like could probably have something to do with how our other, like something happened to our other son, you know? So the fact that doesn't come up leads him to believe that he must be older, or, and either something happened before Nate is even like old enough to know anything, or there's just no like this is just like the red herring that all the Euphoria Reddit fans
I didn't care, because it's Nate, and like I hate Nate, but like I so badly want to know what the tea is, you know? Like what's the secret?
I don't know. So Nate eventually does find, he sees his messages, and he's got a bunch of missed calls from Cass, and he says actually the thing that's more worrying is that he doesn't have anything from Maddie. Radio silence from Maddie, and we do see Maddie then, we see the tape in her purse. And she's talking with Kat on the phone saying like, I actually do want to murder Cassie, and like grisly murder, nationwide scandal murder.
I love, okay, Maddie has these one-liners that are like horrifying and terrible.
Yes.
But hilarious, like nationwide scandal. Yes. Like, of course she would say that. I love how like ridiculous Maddie can be.
And here's Kat being the A+ number one best friend, which is like, I just want to kill her. She's like, I get it, I understand. She's like, no, but like really murder. She's like, I understand. She's like, no, like nationwide grisly murder. She's like, I get it. We're all on the same page.
I don't know if, are you supposed to say that? I feel like as a best friend, you need to talk your other friend down from killing her ex-best friend.
Maybe. Well, Kat asks, what about Nate? She says, I have a few ideas for Nate.
Yeah. And then we find out that Kat is on the phone while she's at a diner with Ethan. This is so rude.
Heel turn from Kat this episode.
It was awful.
The breaking of Ethan's heart is perhaps the worst we've seen Kat. I know that she is, you know, I feel like not enough Kat for me this season. Yes, I feel like 100%. That scene from episode one, where all the people are popping up being like, you have to be happy, live your life, like you be you. Like I thought it was so great. And then to just basically get almost nothing. Even this episode, we get one scene.
And it felt very short too. Like it felt very stunted and like not out of nowhere, because we definitely saw this all coming, but it just felt very off and weird. And like she's talking to Maddie, and Ethan like goes over and gives her a kiss. They didn't even say hi to each other before she picks up the phone. Like, that's so rude.
Seems like she
probably
came into the diner on the phone, right? And sits down, is like talking, you know, and then so he's like, oh, we didn't say hi, so I'm gonna kiss, and she's like taken aback. And then this is, I do feel like this is probably, I mean, this is a show where like every character has shades of gray, where nobody feels super good or super bad, other than Nate, who's super bad. Mm-hmm. Speaking of teen dramas, comedy, super bad. Where this feels the most out of character I've seen Kat be, where she's basically like, I'm just thinking about a relationship. Also, I have a brain disorder. You can't know what it is because you Google it.
Yeah, and I have to go to all these like hospital appointments, and I just don't think we can be together. And like, I love, okay, as if we didn't love Ethan enough.
He's
we do.
Champ. Yep.
He just like completely calls her out for what this is, and he's spot on. And she's just like, it sounds like you're trying to break up with me though. So, and it's
gaslighting.
So yeah.
Ethan so hard.
Well, she's just like, I think you're trying to gaslight me. And it's like, ma'am, you're gaslighting. But it sucks because I loved Kat in season one.
Yeah,
I thought that, like, again, speaking on the side of representation, having a plus size, full figured girl on the show representing that part of the world, which is like, it's out there. And not only that, but like finding her inner self-confidence and like the webcam stuff and all of that, like, I loved her storyline. And so like to have her get the happy ending of being with Ethan, and then they immediately, this feels a little bit too much like a CW drama to me.
Yeah.
That like a heel turn, immediately she breaks up with him. Like, it's fine if they're unhappy and she wants to end things, but like they made Kat so unlikable here. Like, how am I supposed to root for her when she lies about having a brain disorder?
Yeah. I thought when she initially says I have a brain disorder, like I thought she was getting into like, I'm depressed. Right. Because that's what we've seen from her before, and then she just does not seem to even be like what she accidentally stumbled into, you know. And she's just she's being so awful to Ethan here, so you know. And yeah, good for Ethan. He's just like, no, I think you're like, here's exactly what I think you're doing. And he's so right.
Just said it's not you, it's me. Like, literally, how many people have used that line? I just want to be friends, Ethan.
See, I'm depressed and I don't think this
I need to work on myself.
Gosh, I love the waitress in the scene when she's like, we just don't like cell phones. He's like, totally get it. And then she comes over right as they're like, I think, are you breaking up with me? And she's like, oh no, I gotta go.
Yeah, gotta leave. See ya. Yeah. Poor waitress.
So Ethan eventually kind of is the one who breaks up with Kat here. Although you could argue that they kind of both break up with each other. Back at the Howard household, Suze has gathered all the knives in a bowl, and Lexi needs to go put them in the bushes.
Okay, I know I'm not supposed to like her, but like I cannot help myself.
Suze has probably the two best lines of this whole episode.
Yes, you're so right. So yeah, she gives the knives to Lexi, and she's just like, "Go hide them in the bushes." And Lexi's like, "What?" And
she really think she's gonna hurt herself?
Yeah.
She's like,
"Your sister is losing it. Go put them in the bushes." And Lexi, of course, all Lexi can think about, which, by the way, I love Lexi, and I don't know if this is a hot take. Like, no, I love her. I love that she's kind of boring. Like, she's so average that I'm like, I relate to Lexi of all these wild and nutty teenagers.
Yeah, she's just going through pretty like typical high school stuff, which is like kind of insecure, trying to figure out what you want to do, not, you know, standing up for yourself, all that stuff. Yeah. And she's season one, I really thought, like, when I saw her as Bob Ross, I was like, this is my favorite character.
Yes.
More of her. And I am very happy that we're getting more of her. They keep doing this zoom in shot thing with Lexi. They've done it twice now, maybe even three times, where they like, they'll have Lexi is like watching something and they'll like zoom in on her face, and they don't really do it anywhere else, but they do it when she's standing in the bushes when she has a realization that like, maybe I shouldn't put on this play about my sister. Maybe like,
now is the time you realize this, Lexi, when you're hiding knives so that she doesn't kill herself.
I was saying the whole season, like, I thought that Lexi was gonna like, every time something happens, like new material, and then by the end of season two we're just gonna get like the play that does not go well because of the fallout that we get after. But she hangs out with Fezco, and Fezco has an interesting addition to the script. How about you write in that time I just beat the hell out of Nate James?
Yes, I love okay, I know we shouldn't be shipping them, right?
Why not?
Because he's like a drug dealer.
Who cares?
Okay, fine. If you say it's okay, I ship them. But here's the thing. I'm like not a hard person to get on board with a ship, though, I think. But anyway, I'm just like, oh my God, they looked at each other. Anyway, so they're sitting there and he is like, I love that he is like having this conversation with her. He's like, some people need to get their feelings hurt because she's telling him about the play. And he's like, sometimes you just need to do it. And so then they start talking about Stand By Me. And I was like, and then he's like, oh, my grandma has the DVD. And I'm like, please watch the movie together and fall in love. Like,
not only do they watch the movie, they sing Stand By Me at the end. He holds her hand. It's so great. It's
the best. He held her hand. Like, this is like, okay, because a lot of these like teen romance things in shows now, it happens so fast that like immediately characters are together, right? Like immediately they're deeply in love and kissing and making out and doing all of these things. Like he held her hand and I lost my mind.
It's the most PDA they give each other this whole episode.
So sweet.
Unfortunately, there'll be some, I think, unsure if we're going to be able to get Fezco past holding hands after the news we get in this episode, but we'll get there. But yeah, very cute. He says like, yeah, your play's kind of like Stand By Me. So they agree to watch the movie.
Yeah, and they sing together. And Fezco's a good singer.
Yeah, he's pretty good. Yeah.
I was wondering because he talks so slowly. I love that. I was like, will he be a good singer? Me too. He's so chill. I could never.
Yeah, it's good. So Lexi tries to bang on the door. He's like, can I use the bathroom? Cause like, no, she's in the tub with like a face mask on, continually trying to call Nate.
She's always in a tub.
She loves being in a tub. It's true.
She's like where she has her most like moments as a teenager, like her memorable moments. I'm pretty sure even her face mask had like tear drippies in it.
That's good. I didn't notice that. That's great. We go back and forth here. We cut back and forth. So we'll break up these two scenes, but basically we have, Cassie, in the Howard household, while we also have Nate, who is just drinking with his mom.
Normal things,
just normal teen stuff that you do with your mom. We'll talk about the Nate scene. So, she basically is like, you know, they're talking about, dad, and she says, calls him an angry guy. She calls Nate angry. Yes. And he says, no, I was just angry at dad. He's getting very angry. His mom is, I was only angry at dad. I wasn't mad at anybody else. And she's like, no, like, you're mad. You're mad. You're just angry.
Yeah, you're
like,
mad, bro. Why you mad, bro?
And he's like, I'm not saying that like people can't have reasons to be mad, but you're mad. You're very angry. And he gets very defensive about this.
Yeah. And this is the moment that she calls him out. First of all, she says like, why did you get all the bad things about your dad and none of the good things? And then
she's brutal here. She's
so brutal.
Yeah.
And then she basically calls him out for choking Maddie. And she's just like, you know, I'm so happy you're not with Maddie anymore. Cause she's definitely one of those girls that would have gotten pregnant and kept it to spite you.
Well,
and it's like,
yeah, we have the moment from last season where when he gets arrested for the thing and Cal and Marsha are sitting at home and it's when he gets beat up and she's like, he probably provoked it.
Oh yeah, that was this season. Yeah, that was like the first episode.
Yeah. So like there's very clearly like Marsha knows basically exactly who her son is, right? Like we knew that Cal knew that like something happened to get Nate off, but he gets very defensive about it. There's actually a line later that I think is interesting in relation to him being very defensive about being like, I didn't choke her. And she's like, I wanted to choke her. He's like, yeah, but I'm saying I didn't actually do it, Nate. But yeah, you did. They chat more there. He also gets very mad when she's like, I'm gonna get a new boyfriend. You want a new stepdad? It can be your age. And he's like, God, you're actually like such a teenager, mom. Like,
yeah,
you're a teenager.
Yeah. It's I as much as I love this side of Marsha, I think like it's so telling that she knows what goes on in her household. Like she lives with you, Nate. She gave birth to you. Like, how do you think that she's not going to know who you actually are? Whereas Cal was like, who even are you? You're a mystery, right? In his whole freak out scene. I feel like Marsha sees Nate for who he is because he's so much like Cal that she can read him.
Well, she says like somehow Cal was deeply flawed and somehow we made a child who's even deeper flawed.
Oh, that was horrible. Yeah. It was so horrible. I'm like, ooh, that has to cut deep. But yeah, it's a really like awful scene, but such an interesting scene to see like Marsha's perspective, which we really haven't seen so far.
Yeah.
Once Cal is out of the picture, she has to be like, right? Like she's like HBIC. Like Cal's no longer in the picture right now. So
And then we get this scene where she talks about like he was such a sweet kid. He'd come like ask if she wanted to drink like anything before bed, and so she'd say, "Yeah, I need a drink of water." And she was kind of like almost this test to see like if he would do it, and he would. And you know, she'd kiss. He'd kiss his mom, and then you know, he'd say love you, and say love you to dad. Interesting, says like. Didn't kiss your dad. Seems like Cal did not love affection. And so Nate's like, it's just like, yeah, you got dark around 8 or 9. I always thought like, did you get hit in baseball? You have a concussion. Like you just got dark.
Did you get a brain injury?
Yeah. You have something wrong with your brain. And then he's like, I think you're trying to say something without saying it. And she's like, I'm really not. And which like, I feel like she's saying a lot actually. So
yeah,
she's saying it. So yeah, pretty rough scene. There. Well, we're gonna take a quick break. We're gonna hear from our sponsor. When we come back, we'll chat through the Cassie side of this scene.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing the Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay. So Cassie is, she comes into the room. I love Sue's position on the couch. She's just so chill. Just trying to watch Matchmaker Millionaire. I think that's what she's trying to watch. Which I think they cover over on Rob is a Pod. I think Jenny and Rob cover Matchmaker Millionaire. She's like, it's one thing to like do what you did. It's another to say that you're innocent about it. And
yeah. Cassie has so many tactics here.
Yes.
It is so transparent what she is doing. In that, first of all, Suze is an MVP here. She's just like, she screams, I am just trying to watch Millionaire Matchmaker. She's so pissed. And like, yeah, so Cassie, first, she's very defensive. She's like, listen, they weren't even together. There was no overlapping.
And yes, then, unfortunately, fortunately, we play a lot of D&D together. And you know me, I love rules, right? Like, I love the rules of the game. I'm a big D&D player. When someone was like, I want to do this, I'm like, technically, you can't do that on your turn. I feel like Cassie is a big, technically, they were not dating.
Yeah, she's like, technically, there was no crossover. It wasn't her boyfriend. It was her ex. And like, Suze is just like, yeah, but like, it's one thing to do what you did, but you're also like saying you're innocent here. Yeah. And it is so funny. Like, it's funny, and it's not seeing Cassie get so upset by all of this and like immediately being very defensive and pushing back. And she basically, all she wants is for her mom and or her sister to say, oh, what you did wasn't that bad. They weren't together.
Again, people having to live with the consequences of their actions, which Cassie certainly does not want to do. at this moment. Then we find Cassie has a corkscrew. They rush up and I love when Sue takes like corkscrew isn't gonna do it. She takes away. She's like, see, Lexi, like I told you.
Yeah. She's gonna try and do something. Here's the thing, and I don't know if we want to get into like this like dark philosophical conversation. Like, was she actually gonna do anything, or was this just like a mom, look at me?
Yeah, I don't know. I do feel like, you know, if they're really gonna put the knives out in the bush, they are probably actually worried that like Cassie could do something.
Yeah.
And yet this scene is sort of definitely played for, like, I think the beginning, like this, like the knives in the bushes and the corkscrew are definitely like played for laughs here. When her daughter is like holding a corkscrew to her wrist. And like, yeah, there's a world in which like Cassie is very dramatic and is like doing this for, she's not actually going to do it.
Yeah.
But also like, yeah, it's maybe a little bit clumsy.
I just wonder if this has happened before almost, like that Cassie has threatened to do stuff or like she's done something similar to this, because like she can be, I don't want to call her dramatic, but she's very emotional with breakups and relationships and friends, and like she feels her feelings very hard. And so like, I don't know, it just came to my mind because it was treated very lightly on the show. And
I think we're supposed to have the impression that like Cassie wouldn't do this, but I mean, that's like, I don't know. I don't want to, like, then I'm saying like, you know, we should, you know, we have to take it lightly.
You can't. Like, yeah, exactly. You don't know. Yeah. You never know what's going on inside someone's
brain. All of these kids need to be in therapy. The only person who's ever seen in therapy is Jules. And it was for one special at Christmas. So.
And I love Sue's is pointing that out and being like, it's all your father's fault. He didn't believe in therapy.
That's Marcia, right? Marcia's saying. Marcia, before, like, well, yeah, there's no self-reflection in this household.
Yeah. I love Lexi calling out Cassie too and being like, that's you hated Nate.
Yeah, that's before I knew him. Yeah, not like I know him now. Yeah.
Yeah. And then she's like, when did you hook up? And Cassie's like, I don't know. It's like, Cassie, we all know you know the exact date and time, probably.
Defending, like, they weren't together, actually. Technically, you absolutely know the exact date in which everything happened. I also like Lexi gets this little realization that, like, oh my God, this is why, like, you ratted out Fezco. And then Cassie's like, well, like, do you know, like, he's like, she's like, do you even know why, like, Fezco did that? It's like, no. Like, well, I do. Like, tell me. No, I don't trust you. Like, I don't trust anything. I don't trust you, Cassie. No.
Yeah.
And so Lexi walks away from the scene saying, you fell in love with someone who spent years making fun of you. Yeah.
And then Lexi or Cassie tries to turn it on Lexi, saying like, oh, well, why is Rue so innocent? And why do you even believe Rue? And then going on and on about like not understanding, because like, Suze says like, well, Rue's had like a really hard life because her father died. And Cassie's like, how is that harder than us? Just because dad stopped calling, like that's harder. And it's just like, well, Cassie, your father is still alive.
This is very, this feels like quite complex, you know. And I think there's an interesting thing that happens, I think, between both the Cassie scene with her mom and Lexi, and also actually with Nate. There's a when Marcia says, you know, you have all the bad qualities of your father, none of the good ones. And Nate's like, you calling Cal a saint? And she's like, I actually didn't say that, right? Like, this is very teenage behavior to be like, you know, oh my God, you said this thing. Like, if you actually listen, I didn't actually say that thing. Where like, Susa's saying like, Rue's had it rough. And then Cassie's being like, you don't think I've had it rough? Like, I didn't say you didn't have it rough. And like, there's another line in there that I can't, like, she's, Rue's a good girl. She's like, I'm not a good girl. She's like, I didn't say you weren't a good girl. Like,
And Cassie's, because we know it's so obvious that all Cassie wants is for someone to say to her, oh, are you okay? Like, oh my gosh, that must be so hard for you.
Or, I love you. She wants love.
She wants is love and acceptance. This poor girl, all she craves is love, attention, and acceptance. Yep. And she cannot get it no matter how hard she tries. And it's so like, it's really sad because like, anytime she gets a tiny, teeny, tiny bit of attention from anybody, she gloms onto it and she becomes like just a maniac. She's an addict for that type of attention.
Yeah.
And it's sad because her family just wants to watch her millionaire matchmaker.
No, this is where we get I think the best line of the episode is when Cassie comes out and Sue turns like, God, this girl needs an exorcist.
And like, Susan, it's like, that's why this show, because sometimes the show can obviously be very heavy.
Yeah.
And it's fun to have those types of moments that do lighten it up a bit, because you just have Cassie screaming. I mean, all the awards to her, that like meaning, her cry. Yeah. Her cry acting, her scream, man. Her eyes must have been so tired by the end of this shoot, this end of this day.
All of the characters, maybe except Matt. I don't think we've seen Maddie or Kat cry, but everybody else, I think, has got a good tear game. Duels often does the slow single tear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Maddie or Cassie just does all the tears, every tear in the ocean. Yeah.
Yeah. So then we find Nate is looking through his father's stuff and finds a gun. So that's
the sticky note, the passive aggressive sticky note.
Yes.
Congratulations. Hope you have fun being the man of the house. What a jerk.
Well, Nate sucks, you know.
They all suck. The whole family.
Yeah.
They're all terrible.
I love this when I think LT pointed out last week was one of the few episodes without Rue narration. So the Rue narration is back. And when we almost get an update on Jules and Elliot, and she's like, actually, I don't want to talk about them. It was actually a great way to, like, if you're not going to have them in the episode, especially Elliot is not in this episode at all. We don't see him once. Good way to, like, basically write him out of the episode. It's so, I don't want to talk about it.
It's so interesting, though. And I guess, I don't really know how Rue is feeling. But, like, does she hold them responsible for getting her clean? Like, I guess it was against her will, right? That like all the whole suitcase is gone and that's still unresolved.
I think it's kind of like, you know, you have to live with your family who you like definitely, you know, are probably not exactly, you know, that's not, things aren't super great, but let, you know, these other two who like, don't, you know, we'll figure that out later. It's basically a plot device here.
I probably.
This episode.
I shouldn't read too much into it. I'm just saying mean things to Jules. Like, come on.
She did say some mean stuff.
Really mean things.
We see Maddie, who Rue tells us is depressed, thinking through all the times that Cassie had like pretended to console her. And she's trying on another dress in the babysitter's house. Did you feel like the zoom in on the clock was, that was a camera? Did you catch this?
It could be. I guess my argument was going to be that it could be, and that would actually coincide with my argument that the babysitter certainly knows what she's doing. Like, she's 100%. Very messy. She leaves drawers open.
The drawer in the open, past. Yeah.
Like, I'm sure the baby, like the mom, Samantha, knows what Maddie is doing and is just like fine with it. She has a ton of clothes. I don't know that she particularly cares that Maddie tries them on.
Yeah,
but...
gosh, my skeptical thing is like, this will come back to bite her at some point later.
Oh, no, like she has like video footage of her, like...
I don't know of that. I don't know if I want to, if I'm that far, but like also like, you know, we had like a, you know, we have the cam, like you try it on the set, like you owe me, basically, like, you know, I don't know.
We're certainly getting close.
Yeah. I don't know what for. I don't know how you loop in Samantha on anything else that's happening in this show, but I feel like, why do you zoom? Like, they zoom in. What happens is Samantha's like, I'll be home in 15 minutes, and it pans down to the thing, and it does say like 9:37 or whatever, which like, I don't know, but then it does look like there's a little camera,
like a light
on the thing.
I'll have to go back. You're probably right. I was wondering why they were zooming in on the time. Like, it didn't make sense to me why they were doing it. But again, like, more proof that Samantha knows is she's like, I'm coming home in 15 minutes. Like, you don't need to warn your babysitter that you're coming home.
Yeah.
But like, I thought there was, could be. So last time they had a scene together, I thought there was like some kind of chemistry going on. Like, there was,
she asked her to unzip her dress, right?
Yeah. There was something there. And, but this time it felt much more like friendly, more so than chemistry.
Gosh, I don't want that's what I don't want, but I do think this is, and I think you're right. I think this is the friendly nature. I think Sam sees a lot of herself in Maddie, which we get from the scene. She's saying like, you know, they decide to have some wine and swim in the pool. And she's like, you know, I slept with my best friend's boyfriend, which like is not the same thing situation that Maddie's in, but she starts talking about how skeptical she was that anybody would want to settle down with her. She was the messy one, you know, not someone that someone would consider like settling down. And then eventually, and she loved to fight, but eventually she found someone that she doesn't fight with, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, while she never talked to that other friend ever again, you know, she's has a happy life. And I feel like that's maybe what Sam sees in Maddie.
Yeah. Is, well, because Maddie's like, I love a fight.
I love Maddie. Get out of here. She's like, I'm not messy, but I do love a fight. Like,
yeah, you're a messy girl. You are so messy.
Come on. Yeah.
Yeah. I could see that happening. Her being like somewhat of a mentor of like, I can have good things. And not only can I have them, they're attainable and I deserve them. Because we've seen what Maddie's home life looks like. We've seen her parents aren't exactly in like a loving marriage.
Yeah.
And she's had her struggles too. And I think we could have like a whole separate podcast on why Maddie is in this relationship with Nate. And mm-hmm. she just doesn't think she deserves better than that. Right.
Yep.
Like she is stuck in this abusive relationship because she doesn't think she's good enough to deserve something better. And yep. I'm hoping that having this conversation with Samantha and maybe some more conversations with Samantha, like she'll begin to see that she deserves more, especially after what happens later this episode.
Yeah. I think the point that you just made about like, why would you give your babysitter like heads up that you're coming home? I do think there's something to like, I don't think that the trying on the clothes, I think maybe that's not something that's going to come into play as like a big reveal. It's a big plot point. I think what it probably is like, Sam just sees Maddie as someone who's like her and is like, basically like, you know, I see you, but like, you know, you're fine. Whatever.
I think she just doesn't want her to know that she knows because right. it would make Maddie uncomfortable. So she'd right. rather just have her like, oh, I'm going to be home in 15 minutes, which means like take off all my dresses that you tried on and put them away.
Yes, I agree. So then we get Fesco and Lexi finish watching Stand By Me and they sing and he holds her hand and it's very cute and it's adorable and they're singing Stand By Me, which is a song I love, and they finish watching Stand By Me, which is a movie I love. So I loved all of us.
I've never seen the movie Stand By Me. I've always wanted to watch it.
Great.
I feel like I need to now. And yeah. this scene made me so happy. Yeah. Like I needed this scene because of what's going to come up later in this episode for me to still have like joy in my heart. I yeah. needed this scene.
Yeah, so we get some setup here that things might not be great for Fesco recently, and also some more, there's like some weird comic relief in the middle of all the like darkness that's about to come, which is Faye's boyfriend. He's outside, and this conversation where she's like, so you're like cooperating with the police? He's like, I didn't tell them to look into them at all, so but I'm just helping them. He's like, she's like, so cooperating. He's like, I don't know the words, man. You know, like
I hate this guy.
Broken nose guy. Yeah.
He's terrible.
I remember his name being said in episode one, but yeah. I don't know. I kind of think he's kind of hilarious, but.
Yeah, but I don't want Fesco to be hurt.
Custer. His name is Custer.
What
yeah, I also
weird
don't
name.
Well, I also think that part of like what we saw here, which is like Ashtray, he has the camera set up, I think is to like set up that like, you know, they're going to know that people are coming and. You know,
right,
so we'll see.
Right. But he yeah. didn't see Faye going out and talking to him because he went to like the bathroom or something.
I think
like
that's
that.
Just like it's to let us know that Ashtray has a setup. And
of course he does, because he's Ashtray.
Ashtray is the
bucket. He knows all. He sees all.
He's great.
He hammers.
All. He does nothing. He does nothing. I think he's great. So here's a pretty intense scene. Probably one of the more intense ones we've seen in the show in a while. Maddie comes home and Nate's just sitting in her room with a gun. And it's so uncomfortable. The horror moviness of like her coming in and not seeing him and going into change and then coming out and he's there is like, it's
Can
brutal.
I say this episode got me? Because I wasn't like paying attention. I was watching Maddie. And
oh, you didn't
my
see Nate.
Eyes glanced to the left ever. And I nearly jumped out of my own skin when I saw yeah. him sitting there because I just wasn't like, I mean, obviously I know it's coming, but like, I wasn't like mentally ready. And then I saw
Happens
him and I was
quick.
Like,
yeah. Everybody thought this was going to be the Cassie Maddie showdown. This people were talking about, this was the Super Bowl Sunday. but it actually turns out that, no, it's just Nate being a piece of, you know, again. So, he's awful here. He's like, I'm not here to apologize. And, she says she's scared. And he says, yeah, that's kind of the point. He's such a dick. She is telling him that she loves him. Feels like you know, defense when this guy has a gun to like, it's fine, I love you, yeah. don't shoot me. And he starts to bring up his dad being filmed, and she's saying like, I don't know what you're talking about, and he's dropping more information like, can you believe it was Jules? He says he needs the disc and she doesn't have it, so this is where he dumps out all the bullets, puts one back in, spins the gun language, the thing around.
I don't know, the spinny thing.
The spinny thing that spins around with the gun.
It's Russian roulette, essentially.
Yes.
I know that name.
And gosh, this is like terrible when like he lies, he like the cinematography here, like the camera angle, like him just on top of her. He points the gun at her head, then he points at his own head. He pulls the trigger twice
before you say it's in the first. It's so much worse than that because it's so prolonged.
Yeah,
like he starts off with the gun pressed against her forehead to basically force her to lay down. Yeah. As she keeps saying, "I don't have it, I don't have it, I don't have the disc."
Yeah.
And then he knows. So yeah, he's laying literally on top of her. And he's a big guy, especially compared to Maddie. She's very petite. And he's laying on top of her. And then he knows that this is so messed up that it will hurt her more to kill himself on top of her. Yep. It would ruin her. And he pulls the trigger. And it's not even just he pulls it once. He pulls it twice.
Yeah, so then she tells him it's in the purse. He goes to get it, and she curls up into this awful little ball. It's like brutal. And God, he's like, you know, this is like a manipulation 101. He's like, I was just joking. I'm sorry. You know, I didn't mean it. And she's just like, I don't touch me. Leave. And
yeah.
So he leaves. It's really awful.
And he says
awful.
There are no bullets in the gun. And I think he showed her that.
I don't think he puts any. I think he drops them all out. He pretends to put one in.
Okay, because that's what I was wondering. I'm like, was he serious? Like, I mean, could go either way with Nate. You never know.
Yeah. If he had one in there, I wouldn't be surprised. But also I do kind of think like he's kind of too big of a piece of shit to like
actually
himself.
Do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're right. He just wants her to suffer basically. So yeah, he takes the disc.
Yeah.
And he's just like, that's all he needed. And he just leaves her there. And like the view of her in the fetal position was so awful.
So sad. It sucks.
Maddie is someone who is like so supremely strong on the outside, and she puts up this front like she is the strongest person ever, and like Nate even says, she is the most loyal person, which is terrifying because she is against you, she is against you forever, you were dead to her basically.
Yeah.
And so then to see her in like the weakest possible position a person could be in the fetal position, just trying to protect herself, I'm really curious to see what they do from Maddie from here on out, because this is obviously going to change her drastically. And I don't know. It was really sad. She's one of the more like confident, borderline like cocky characters at times with huge 100%. Insecurities. But it was hard to watch.
Yeah, this is rough. And then, gosh, we like go to a scene where like by the end of this next scene, I have to be like, remember that Nate did all this stuff to Maddie. Remember that. Because like, he calls, he's drinking and driving again, which I still think we're foreshadowing somebody getting into a car accident by the end of this season. But
yeah, or he may chip a tooth from opening beer bottles because he's constantly.
Stop doing that, Nate.
It's so gross. He needs to go to a dentist. Stop
Well, he probably has a dental plan. He's pretty rich, so it's fine.
He probably does.
Yeah.
He has a dental plan.
So he calls Jules, who immediately like is like, I don't care. It hangs up. And so he texts her and says it's about her dad, his dad, sorry. So she grabs a box cutter and meets him out in the car. And again, like, so, okay, he does a good thing that he like gives her the tape. He could also just destroy the tape and she never has to know that it existed and whatever. He could just destroy it, but he does give it to her. So he is still being fairly manipulative. Also, the thing where he's like, I'm here to apologize. She's like, I don't care. I do not want one. And he's like, well, I have another thing that you want. So you have to listen to my apology first. He just sucks so much the whole time.
He does. I think if he was truly being selfless, he destroys the tape and never tells her about it. Because he tells her, he gets her in the car alone with him. He puts her in a very vulnerable space, makes her listen to his stupid lame-ass apology. And then on top of that, he has the audacity, the gall to be like, oh, everything I said as Tyler was true. And play head games with Jules, who he's already played head games with. His father has played head games with. Like, leave this poor girl out of it.
Yeah, someone might be able to explain to me why, like, it actually is good that she has the tape instead of, like, it just being destroyed. Like, there might be some reason. But, a lot of the stuff he does. There's a really – the other thing I think that, like, Nate sucks here is he's just like – I did some pretty bad things. I was protecting someone who didn't need to be protected, but I wish I could take it all back. It's like, actually, you could admit to the police that you choked Maddie and that you framed Tyler, and that's the reason Jules had to lie to the police and frame Tyler. Like, you could take some of it back, like in a very official and legal way.
he acts like, oh, everything Jules is said and done.
Yeah,
but it's not. And I think, like, I hate that Jules was like, And me I don't too. Hate this, but she just said like, oh, me too. And I'm just like, Jules, please just like get out of the car and leave. And like, I know we see her like watching the video and everything, but I just hope she destroys it and moves on from everything having to do with Nate and his family. Because it's just not good for her to get back in at all with any of that.
God, and you know what else? When she's like, this is the only copy. And he's like, yeah. He's like, nobody else has seen, nobody's really seen it. And he's like, no. And then I'm like, God, I don't know if I didn't believe that. It's the only copy either.
I mean, I guess it's tough to call because Cal would be very safe about not probably having any files on his computer, I'd imagine.
Also, who can burn a CD these days?
So true. Who keeps CDs anymore?
Nobody has CDs.
Cal, old man Cal.
Yeah, it should be on a USB, Cal. Yeah.
Put it on like one of those thumb drives that looks like something else. Like, this right. is my pen.
Secret right. thumb drive. Right, right. Yeah. Come on, Cal.
Be smarter.
So Nate then calls Cassie. It seems like Cassie moves out of the Howard Manor and moves right into Nate's room.
Suze looks so sad.
Yeah. I don't
so
yeah.
sad.
I mean, the other thing I think the show has done really well, it's done the portrayal of addiction really well. It's been, you know, for my money, like not so much this season, but I thought the season one and the special have been some pretty good trans representation. I do feel like the like toughness of having a teen kid yeah. and like, you know, how at some point they become a little bit independent and they go their own way. I think, I think between like Leslie, Marcia, Suze, some interesting yeah. like parent dynamics on the show. Yeah, I think he tells Cassie he loves her and says, like, you can pack a bag and move in. She waves to Marcia, who we know that Marcia likes Cassie more than Maddie. But
it's so... Okay. For one, Marcia just admitted she knows her son choked Maddie.
Yes.
And now she's just, like, watching Cassie walk in basically to the lion's den.
Yes.
Like, she knows what's going to happen. And not only that, but she's just like, I've actually heard you guys boning, like, a lot, a lot, a lot. And so, like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what Marcia's supposed to do. But, damn, that was hard to watch her just, like, waving at Cassie. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I feel like... Cassie or Marcia probably relates to Cassie, and so, you know, she knows her son is deeply flawed. Yeah, but I think Marcia, yeah. you know, I think this whole thing, like, Marcia
we
does
want
not
people
put blame
to be
on
better
her.
Than all of these people.
It's true. Yeah, real succession ranking, tier list ranking. I don't know how many we're putting in actually good people on Euphoria either.
Jules and Ethan. It's probably it.
Yeah,
maybe Gia.
Gia. Yeah,
she's good.
Maybe Leslie.
Ali's good. Okay, there's a lot of them.
There's more than Succession.
More than yeah. in Succession.
And then we get this awkward thing too, where like, gosh, this relationship isn't going to be great. Like immediately, Cassie is like pushing Nate. Like he goes to like kiss her, and she's like hitting him, which like makes sense. But then also they embrace it. It's, yeah, I don't
it's
like
sick
it.
And it's twisted, and we all hate it.
Yeah, Jules at her house watching the video. We end the episode back at the Bennett household where they are having dinner. Rue says she'll apologize to everybody. She needs to make apologies, but she'll do it after rehab. This is the IOU. Gia gets asked if she thinks like, do you think she's going to do it? And she says, yeah, if it's real, then that's great. And Ali says, it's okay for you not to believe, Rue. And Leslie kind of like balks at this, like we need to give her support. And I love this, Ali being like, you know, so if somebody like, you know, breaks your trust for a while, it's okay to like not have as much faith in them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I love that because this is a line that's been said before, right? I think by Rue, who says like, there's only a 5% chance that
this
someone
was in,
who
this is in the car.
Can, yes. Yeah. That can recover. And so Gia's like, well, what's the hope in that? And I love Ali just being like, hope is what Rue needs to find. Like she is the one responsible to do that. And I really appreciate like, so then we see like Gia and Rue doing dishes together and Ali and Leslie are sitting together. And he just says like, let Rue be Rue, shower that other one with love. She's been waiting on it.
I love it. It's great.
It's so powerful. It's like, yeah, like, especially in the time that like, I mean, obviously we're going to hear later that Rue doesn't get a spot in rehab, but like, in the time that Rue is away at rehab, that could be a moment to to let the focus be on Gia, you know, mm-hmm. like give her the attention she definitely needs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved this moment with Ollie.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really powerful. And again, I think it like it hits on all the notes that I was talking about at the beginning of the episode in terms of like that sibling mm-hmm. dynamic in terms of like somebody who's struggling with addiction and how the sibling is actually affected by it as well. And the complicated emotions that come along with that. It's really, really well written. Gia sleeps in Rue's bed for the night. And when Rue's like, I don't even know what your life is like right now. And she says, yeah, I'll tell you after rehab.
It's very sweet.
Yeah. But then unfortunately they are sleeping and Leslie gets a call from the hospital denying an inpatient a spot for Rue. And Leslie, this is really heartbreaking, really, again, the show is cast so well, it's acted so well. Her just like pleading with them, saying like, my daughter will kill herself if she doesn't get help.
Yeah.
Is what a heartbreaking way to end an episode that's like, you know, I think the Nate Maddie scene is like absolutely awful. And like, obviously Cassie's going to, actually there's not a lot of happiness in this episode, but like, yeah, there was some comic relief, but boy, it's a brutal way to end this episode.
It is. You just hear the sheer panic in Leslie's voice, because she knows if Rue doesn't get into an inpatient rehab facility, she's going to either turn back to drugs, take her own life, both. Yep. Like it's going to be bad. And she's just pleading, like she has nothing. What else can she do? And we just, as this is all happening, we kind of travel down the hallway and into Rue's room. And we just see the two sisters just like sleeping very peacefully. And so it's just like, gosh, I'm so nervous for what's going to happen next. Like mm-hmm. we all are like, oh, great. She's like, she's clean now. Like she had her few bad, really bad days. And now she's going to go to rehab. And
and
now it's just like, oh. Can this kid catch a break, you know?
Yeah, it's rough. Yeah.
And Leslie, like, I so want another, like, a Leslie-focused episode to be so interested in. Like, even the parents in general.
I thought we were going to get one. I thought we were going to get the Leslie flashback this episode, which when we see her that when she's in church as a younger. I thought that would have been really interesting. But they've kind of gone away from, they did Fezco at the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. They did some work with Cal, but they really have not done much of the flashback.
I want a Leslie episode more than I want a Cal episode. Like, I just...
Hey, I like the Cal episode.
It was a good episode, don't get me wrong. But I just like, I love the small moments with Leslie, like when she's picking up Rue's room and she's giving Rue a bath and like treating her literally like a 3-year-old kid, where she's like pouring the water over her head, like, we have to break your fever. Like those quiet moments of her just being a mom and being like a really, really good mom after everything Rue has put her through, everything Rue's addiction has done to their family. Like those quiet moments with Leslie are some of my favorites. Yeah. And so I would just like to see her explore it a little bit more, because obviously this actress has the chops. My God, like she's so talented. She could carry an episode, you know?
Yeah. In another world, this, this drama that we're watching is like basically about like Marcia, Cal, Leslie, Sue's sorry. That's a whole alternate universe Euphoria show where
she
it's actually about
the
parents.
Just wants to watch Millionaire Matchmakers.
Gosh, yeah. No, I totally agree with you. I think that Leslie is amazing. Really strong character, played by Nika King. Really strong performance. And yeah, just we don't even see her in this scene, and you can tell it's heartbreaking, like her on the phone,
her voice.
Just her voice. Yeah. So that's where we leave episode 6. Two more episodes to go. I think a lot left on the table. We haven't really got a Maddie Cassie fallout. We have not, clearly something's coming with Fezco and Custer, who's cooperating.
Just add a D, Custard, you know, Custard. Like what's Custer?
Jules, Elliot, Rue needs to be resolved probably in some fashion.
The play.
Yeah. So I think lots to jam into these final two episodes. Very interesting. I think I would hope for something. I hope that's not, you know, how we resolve Cat. Lots to finagle here at the end. But thanks for coming on, Jess. This was great.
I had so much fun. I love this show. Like I said, I think it's one of the best shows on television right now. I think everyone should watch it in small doses, please. Like if you don't binge it for your own health and
be
safety.
In a good headspace. Chat with us in the Discord after an episode if you need to like chat through some stuff, you know.
There's a lot to be learned. There's a lot of great representation on this show and a lot of amazing acting, like across the board. Very well cast show. I appreciate you having me on. This was so much fun.
This was great. Let us know where can people find you and what are you up to?
Yeah, you could find me at the Just Sterling on Twitter. You can always find me in the Post Show Recaps Discord. I'm there far too much.
We live in there, basically.
I do. I live there. You can find me on Shit 90 Shows Taught Me with my co-host Sarah. We talk all kinds of 90s content. We're doing Dawson's Creek. We're just finishing up season 3. And we cover Boy Meets World. We also cover a variety of just bonus 90s content, movies and stuff like that. You could find us at Shit 90s Pod. You can also find me covering, oh my gosh, a whole bunch of stuff. Community with Josh Wiggler. The Gilded Age, that is also with Sarah. That's another HBO show, so check that one out. In this feed too. The After Party, which is an Apple TV Plus murder mystery comedy. That one is really funny. And then more recently, I just guested on the AGT Time podcast for America's Got Talent. We talked all about the Regurgitator. Have you ever seen this guy?
No.
It's nasty. No. He swallows things and then they come back up and you think that's all there is to it. But let me tell you, there's so much more involved. Like he can like choose and pick which things come up when. It's very strange. Check that podcast out.
I referenced America's Got Talent on a Raised by Wolves podcast recently. So yeah.
Yeah. It's a really strange act. So definitely check me out on that as well. I retweet everything I do. So I think that's everything. But if it's not, catch me out on Twitter. You'll see everything I'm doing.
All right. I'm on Twitter at Hi From Grace. Also been started Twitch streaming on the weekend. So I might try to do that more often. So I'm Hi From Grace on Twitch as well. Doing lots of stuff here on Post Show Recaps, Raised by Wolves coverage with Josh and Taryn, which have been very fun. Doing weekly movie coverage with Ariel. I just listened to the first episode of the After Party podcast. I don't know. We're going to have to rein that Ariel in. He's bragging.
He brags so much.
Yeah. What a guy. Do a movie podcast coverage. This week we are covering Marry Me, the Jennifer Lopez, Owen Wilson rom-com. We'll be joined by Michael J. Clarke. Better than I thought.
Yeah, it's fun. A worthy rom-com.
Yes, it was fun. It was fun.
Is it streaming now or did you go
it's
to
on, the it's on Peacock, I think.
Okay, I'll have to watch it.
Check it out. Yeah.
Love a good
that's
rom-com.
Also in theaters. I think it was fun. Oh, no. Wow. Yeah. It was wow. Great. Yeah. Check it out. Marry Me. Yeah. Also, we'll be doing some Oscars coverage at some point, going through the best pictures and all the acting nominations, probably in two separate pods. So look out for that. Sports coverage over on Rob as a podcast, each week looking into what's happening in the world of sports. So it was very fun. Joined by Rob Sesternino this week to talk about the Super Bowl, the commercials, and the halftime show.
Sopranos won.
Yeah, we didn't really understand that one. They're just like, hey, here's Meadow and AJ, and also you want to buy this car?
That's literally all it is. It's the song. Okay. It's an electric truck. They're driving through Jersey. Boom. Yeah, buy it.
It's electric car. We're going to hug. I didn't even know it was AJ. I was like, I knew it was Meadow.
He looks
okay,
like him. He's older.
He's had a bit of a glow up, I would say.
I mean, he was like a little awkward kid when the show started.
Yeah, now he's a handsome adult. Yeah,
there you
who
go.
Doesn't look like AJ? It's in my opinion. So yeah, we talked all through that. Anything else, check it out. Follow me on Twitter at Hi From Grace. Until next time, see you later. Bye.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.